Thank you, Wayne. Let me take a quick survey. How many elders are in the audience this morning? Raise your hand. All right. Yeah. How many preachers do we have in the congregation? Okay. How many elder preachers do we have? All right, a couple. One of the things that when Wayne assigned me this topic, I sort of felt hamstrung from the beginning. First of all, there are only 5 tips. Secondly, there are only tips. Third of all, I only have 38 minutes. I can't get into anything in any depth. And if you want to know more about some of the things that I might mention, talk to me during the day. I'll be around all day today. And maybe we can help you, point you kind of in the right direction that way. The other thing, because of that, I can't talk about Mnuchin, I can't talk about Jung, I can't talk about Glasser, I can't talk about any of the theories, I can't talk about any of the modalities, I can't talk about any of that stuff, but I am going to try to give you 5 practical tips that you can use before you maybe walk out of the building, or certainly when you get home. I asked several of you to answer some questions for me. The questions were, how long have you been preaching? Size of your congregation? And the third question was, what issue or issues are sort of presented a problem to you while, you know, you've been an elder or a preacher? And I appreciate those of you who responded. I won't call any names, but you know who you are. But I categorized them into 5 different broad categories. And it's interesting that they fell into these 5 categories. Abuse, homosexuality, divorce, children that are unfaithful, and end-of-life issues. Kind of sounds like our brotherhood, doesn't it? Let me give you some examples. These are real examples. These are things that have happened either to me or others who I consider my preaching brethren in various places around the world. I don't know, you might recognize some. You're sitting in your office on a Monday morning. Man, it was a great Sunday. Man, you really waxed that elephant, you know, and you really got them going, and everybody was excited, you know. And first thing Monday morning, a deacon walks in. He sits down and he says, "Preacher, I'm going to divorce my wife." "What's going on?" "Well, I would rather not be with her. I have a different lifestyle now. I'm coming out of the closet. I would rather have intimate relationships with animals than humans." As a counselor, I had a couple walk into my office one Sunday afternoon. I was ready for them. I had their chairs sitting here. I had my chair here. He was a deacon in a congregation of about 40 miles away. They'd been married for 17 years. They walk into the office. She picks up her chair and moves it 6 feet that way. He picks up his chair and moves it 6 feet that way. And I feel like I'm in a tennis match. "Okay, what's going on? Tell me what's going on." "We're going to get a divorce." "Okay, so why are you here?" "We want you to tell us what to tell our children about why we're getting a divorce." Third scenario. Young couple comes in. "We're just having problems." "Well, give me an illustration of the kind of problems you're having." "He's a pilot in the Coast Guard. He flies in rescue helicopters." You know, those guys that you see on Rescue Alaska, you kind of, you know, on the Weather Channel, he's one of those kind of guys. And he's been on the flight line all day long, and he comes home and he wants to take a bath. He wants to soak in a hot tub. So he gets in the tub and he gets on the hot water and he gets him a nice book, and he's got a big sack of corn nuts right there next to him he's eating. Oh, sounds pretty cool, huh? I mean, pretty warm, pretty great. His wife comes in. She wants the shower. Well, it's a shower-tub combination. She wants to take a shower right now. She's had a hard day at work in the office. Office air conditioning went out. She was hot and sweaty. She wants to take a shower right now. They get into this argument. She picks up the corn nuts and, "Don't get ahead of me." But that's what she did with them. She dumped them on him in the tub. I suppose that each one of us, as we went around the room in any kind of counseling situation, we probably have had similar type situations. Don't answer, but what do you see? When the problem walks through the door, that's what you see. But look at the rest of it. That's what you see. That's what's presented. That's what you're asked to deal with. And in some people's lives, to them, it fills the screen, when probably it really doesn't. This spot, if you look at it by comparison, is less than 0.07% of 1% of the total. It would take over 200 of these spots to fill that screen. When we have people walk through the door, oftentimes that's all we see, and yet the rest of their life might be going pretty well. Might be going pretty well. And yet we have to concentrate on that spot and help them with that spot. Your first tip is to keep confidences. Keep confidences. You will ruin your reputation quicker by sharing confidences outside of the office. You will ruin the reputation of other people by not keeping a confidence. Don't brag to your fellow brothers, your brother preachers, about what you're doing and who you're talking to. You know why? Maybe from their congregation. You go to a city like Dallas, and they've got a choice of 60 or 70 congregations. Oftentimes, individuals will show up on a Sunday morning in your congregation visiting, and they will ask to see you. They will ask to visit with you. And the reason they're there is because they don't want to go to their own preacher or their own elders. So they go somewhere else for a Sunday or two. They'll visit and they won't talk to the preacher. And you may know the preacher at the other congregation, and they don't know that. But don't brag about it. Keep the confidence. Protect your wife. Don't tell her everything, guys. Especially in a small congregation. And I don't know what you consider small, but anywhere from 4 or 5 on up is small. Let me tell you why you don't ever tell your wife. Because somebody comes up to them, and maybe they've been counseling with the preacher, and they'll ask your wife this loaded question: "Has he told you about me? What has he said about us?" You never, don't ever, you know. Some things you may need to tell her. Some things you may need to share with her. We'll get to it in a minute. She may be in the session with you. But keep the confidence. Be someone who can be counted on, who keeps confidence, who is honest, and knows when to speak and when to remain silent. There is a place for silence in counseling. There's a preacher in this room that almost got kicked one night in a counseling session. Right, Wayne? We were in a session, it got pretty tough, and I just asked a question. And I just hushed. I didn't say anything. And I let the couple sweat it out. And Wayne was sitting there, and I could tell he was getting antsy. And I was leaning to my foot over that way, and I thought, if he opens his mouth, I'm going to kick him under this table. But he didn't. He didn't. Guys, there is a place for silence. When you present a concept, when you present an idea, let it work. Let it work. Now, we're preachers, right? We like to preach. Hush. Zip it. Put a cork in it. Just don't say anything. Just keep silent. Let them stew in it. But then you don't talk about it after you leave the session. What's said in the room stays in the room. Keep the confidences. Know your limits. How many individuals in here do we have who possess a PhD or a master's degree? I want to see a show of hands. Raise your hands. Come on, give them up. Up, 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 up. How many of you have a... Keep them up. Keep them up. How many of you have a degree in counseling? Just one of us? Two of us? Two of us. Know your limits. Know your limits on your counseling ability. One of the first things I learned in working on my master's degree, because you don't know everything. I don't know anything. I'm just beginning this quest. I don't have a clue. I've got some ideas in my head. I don't know. But know your limits. What I mean by that is that don't try to tackle a problem that you're not qualified to handle. And the quicker you realize that, you can make a referral, and we'll talk about that in a minute, and you can probably get some help for somebody. But know your limits. Know your limits on helping people too much. Man, we love to help people, don't we? We love to help people. Want to help people. We're almost like that knight in shining armor on the white horse that rides in and saves the damsel at the last minute kind of thing. We're in the people helping business. But know your limits. There are some people you cannot help. You're not qualified. You're not qualified. You can't help them. Know that. Know that. And when you get to that point, step out of the picture. You may be the best help to them in helping them find someone who can help them. Know your limits on doing too much counseling. You're not a counseling service. You're a preacher. Why did the elders hire you? Why did the congregation engage you? For a counseling service or to be the preacher, to preach the word? Be instant in season, out of season. Why did they hire you? Why did you agree to go to work there? Not for a counseling service. Not for a counseling service. What happens is, guys, when we kind of get the name or the label hung on us that, man, they'll counsel, they'll help. It sort of snowballs. And people will come. You know, it's like that better mousetrap. You know, build it and they'll come kind of thing. And you can spend way too much time doing that, and it takes you away from your study. It takes you away from your teaching. It takes you away from those things that the elders or the congregation ask you to do. And with that in mind, how many of you, on a weekly basis, every week, set aside one day for yourself and or your family? I don't want to see a show of hands. I know how easy it is to get into this, man, I got to help somebody. I got to go do this. I've got to do this. You know, sister so-and-so needs it. Brother so-and-so needs it. You know, man, they need to do it. You know. And by the time you look up, you spent 60, 70, 80 hours, and your kids are going, Daddy, Daddy. You know what kind of time your children want with you? They want your time. Any time with a child is quality time, right? Any time you spend with Daddy is good, right? Come on, it's okay to do this. It's all right. Any time you spend with Daddy is good time. Any time. So set aside at least one day a week. How many of the members of your congregation get 2 days a week off? No. Huh? What's fair is fair, right?
I would say so.
I'd say so. What's fair is fair.
Reach.
So you elders, take that into consideration. I would not ask any more of your preacher than you would ask of any other member of the congregation. And if their employer is giving them 2 days off, I guarantee you he's going to take more time than that. He's going to volunteer his time like anybody else in the congregation. But let that be his choice. Let him minister. Let him be a dad. Let him be a father, a husband. Let him regenerate himself.
Amen.
Don't. Know your limits. Know your limits. Develop referrals. If you know your limits and you know you need to refer somebody, you got to develop them. Well, you know, for 12 years I preached on Sundays in a small congregation down in Gonzales, Texas. Every now and then somebody would come to me with a problem, and I had to develop a contact or two in that community that I could refer somebody to. Same thing when I was preaching here. I preached here for 9 years. I developed a core of individuals I could refer people to outside my scope of experience and knowledge. So, find local counselors you can trust. Now, what that means is you might have to go through a phone book somewhere and call some of these individuals and have a sit-down with them, tell them who you are, tell them why you want to develop the referral. But you have some questions you want to ask them. And the first question is, will you respect biblical principles and concepts? I talked to the counselor one time. She was a psychologist. And she has her PhD, but not her MD. They're certain meds that she could prescribe, most of the others she couldn't, that sort of thing. And you need to look at their qualifications to be sure. And I was chatting with her, and I said, let's suppose somebody comes in, and they have some issues, and I described the situation to her, and I just asked her the question, what might you recommend? She said, I might recommend divorce. I said, well, you know, biblically speaking, and we got into a little Bible study right quick, and she said, oh? I said, yes, so if anybody that I refer to you, I would really rather you not recommend divorce as the first rabbit out of a hat. She respected that. And she continues to respect that. And so I have no fears in recommending individuals to go see that psychologist. And she has a world of experience in handling a broad variety of problems. That's the kind of homework you need to do before you refer someone. They need to respect each individual. Some counselors you go to, they have a bias. Women's issues, men's issues, children's issues. You need to be sure that they're going to respect each individual equally, that they don't have a bias. When you check their credentials, be sure to check their certifications. Oftentimes when individuals come to you and you make a referral, they might have some sort of health care or some, you know, third-party payment system that might work. You need to find out that sort of thing also. But develop some people you can refer to. You're going to have to do some work. You're going to have to do some homework on that one, because you need to be confident in the referral that you make. And I think we also need to be careful about those that advertise themselves as, quote, Christian, end quote, counselors. Because some of them are very un-Christian or non-biblical, let me put it that way. Because their concept of Christianity and our understanding of what the Bible says might be poles apart. So we need to be real careful about that one. Protect your reputation. There's a reason I paused. Gentlemen, men, particularly, I want you to watch the screen. And if I could shout that one, if I could tattoo it on the forehead of every man in here who does nun counseling, if I could put it on the palm of your hand, the back of your hand, somewhere, and sign, don't you ever, ever see a woman alone. Ever. Under any circumstances. I don't care what they are.
Amen.
Because your reputation is at stake. And in today's world of sexual abuse and litigation, you not only put yourself at risk, you put the congregation at risk, you put the reputation of the congregation at risk. How many of us have heard about this 6-year-old boy who was suspended from school for sexual harassment? 6 years old. If you don't think it's not out there, folks, it is. Protect your reputation all the time. Take your wife when you visit others, especially women. Take your wife with you. If she can't go, guess what?
You don't go.
You don't go. There have been times when I have been a little bit uneasy in visiting some women who are in the hospital. Be real careful, guys. I mean, you've got to protect your reputation. You might think, this is an easy one. Yeah. But how many preachers have we heard about? How many elders do we know of? How many deacons, how many members of the congregation do we know about who did not protect their reputation? Many of these men are no longer working in the Lord's vineyard anymore. When counseling in the office, be sure that someone else is around. if your office connects to where the secretary is, I know preachers that'll leave their door slightly ajar. If there's no one else around, guess what? You know, I worked in the mission field for Cape Cod for about 11 years. I was the secretary. I was the janitor. You're a one-man show. But when it came to counseling, there was always somebody around, especially if it was... Now, in couple counseling, I wasn't concerned about it in couple counseling because there's three of us in the room. You know, husband, wife, that sort of thing. Young couple wanting to get married in a room, you know. But if it was an individual, and oftentimes even if it was a man, I would have somebody else around. I had a friend call me one morning and he said, "Betty, I just got to talk to you." It was a Monday morning. I don't know why these things happen on Mondays. What do we do on a Sunday that gets us in trouble on a Monday? I don't know. And when you would think it just being up preaching, it wouldn't happen, but it does. And he called me and said, "Man, I got to talk to you." I said, "What's going on?" He said, "I got to tell somebody." He said, "My wife is at work. I'll tell her when she gets home, but I got to tell somebody right now." I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I got a frantic call from one of the members of the congregation and she was in crisis mode and I went over there and when I rang the doorbell and she opened the door, she was standing there in a baby doll pajama outfit saying, 'I love you.'"
Wow.
I said, "What'd you do?" He said, "I jumped off that porch backwards." Then I got in my car and left as quick as I could. And I got back to the office and I called her and I said, "Why did you do that?" And she said, "But you told me yesterday that you loved me."
Wow.
He said, "I thought, and oh, in the sermon. I mentioned in the sermon to the whole congregation, 'I love you.'" Now, Wayne started doing that here, and I'm just, you know, how many of you have ever said something like that? Don't raise your hand. You know it. There are folks that are that needy, and they will take it personally. They will take it personally. And so you need to take your wife with you. I asked him if he was going to try to get the lady some help, and he said, "Well, yeah, but I'm not going over there again without three or four people with me." So, if you want to help people in a counseling situation, you got to take off your preacher hat. We have, in this audience, we have individuals who are men, who are fathers, who are preachers, who are elders. You may be working at making tents somewhere. You may be doing volunteer work. You may be a member of the Lions Club, the Rotary Club, the Satoma Club. You may be involved in other activities such as Little League or soccer or football or something. You may referee. You may umpire in basketball. You may do any number of things. We wear a multitude of hats. Take your preacher hat off if you're counseling. Now, I may get in trouble for this one. I may get in trouble for it, for telling you to take off your preacher hat. But if you're going to counsel, that's different than preaching. They are a totally different animal. You don't counsel when you're standing behind the pulpit on Sunday morning. That's not technically counseling. You may be giving advice, but it's really not counseling. Counseling is more face-to-face, one-on-one kind of thing. Well, the issues may have biblical basis, but folks, they don't want to hear a sermon. They heard that Sunday morning. They heard that Sunday night. They heard the devotional Wednesday evening. They heard the devotional in the home Bible study. They heard that. They don't want a sermon. Maybe they have been preached to too often about a particular topic. They don't need that as a sermon. How do you get out of that mode? You need to ask lots of questions. Those of you who have taken any journalism classes, you need to ask a series of questions. What, when, where, why, how, who? That's what you want to ask. And then you know what you want to do? Zip it. Listen to what they say. And that will give you the next set of questions. Your questions need to be open-ended. Do you have trouble sleeping at night? That's a yes or no question. Ask an open-ended question. How do you sleep at night? All I'm saying is that asking these types of questions, asking open-ended questions, get you out of that preacher mode and get you into more of the counseling mode. Counseling is very, very simple. It's not a tough process. Those of you who are familiar with AA know that the therapeutic value of two people who are addicts talking to each other is without parallel. You know that. Guess what? A brother or a sister talking to one another in a spirit of biblical love and understanding is without parallel. You cannot equal that. All I'm suggesting to you is that when you get into that situation, take that preacher hat off, and I guarantee you, during the session, there might be a time to open the book and see what it says. But again, you don't preach. Open it to Matthew 19. Read the first 10 verses for me. Then ask, what does that mean to you? When did Jesus make these comments and to whom? Why did He say that? Who was He talking to? Make that passage apply to them and engage them in the conversation. Don't preach to them. Don't tell them, well, this is what that means. The point has been made in our evening lessons here that this book has been delivered to us for being able to read and understand. And it has the answers to our problems. And I believe that with all of my heart. But they're not going to make a change. They're not going to listen to you if you constantly preach to them. Let them discover it. Engage them. Ask questions. So take your preacher hat and take it off. When I was preaching full time, there were times when I would go into a counseling session and I would have to literally say to Buddy Martin, take off your preacher hat. Hang your preacher hat up. Or at other times, hey, preacher hat goes off, dad hat comes on. Oh, by the way, I've got another hat that I really like nowadays. The granddad hat's wonderful.
Yeah,
some of you know about that granddad hat. And you know what? Sometimes with our children and our grandchildren, and they will ask questions at what we call teachable moments. They don't want to hear a sermon. They want to have a conversation. That's a counseling session in essence. That's basically what that is. So what questions do you have? I will entertain questions for the next 3 minutes and 20 seconds. Anybody? Any questions? Surely there's one in this crowd. Come on. Yes, sir.
There's some maybe some good books that the preacher could read to kind of
I'm glad you asked, and I meant to the big thick one you had from Word Publication?
Collins.
Collins is good. He's got a big thick book, has sections on all kinds of issues that we normally see.
What's the title?
Christian Counseling, yeah. And they're basically, they're pretty conservative. It's not hard to get through whatever fluff there is or unbiblical principles in that one. Larry Crabb is another good source. I particularly like him because he's in the teaching mode, and I think a lot of our problems that we have is a matter of teaching people to think and get rid of their false beliefs and then behave on that, and that's a teaching thing. There's some good stuff out there on cognitive behavior. I mean, there's so those are some good references for you. And those are the two I generally go to if I get stuck on something. Those two areas. Somebody else, please.
On keeping compass, the guy who baptized me years ago told the story about a man who came to him and asked him to keep a confidence, and it turned out he had murdered someone. So how do you balance that aspect? He told the guy, I will keep that confidence, and then the guy told him what he had done, and he kept it until the guy had died. But
that brings up another point. And I know I got my master's degree in Massachusetts. I've done some work here in Texas. We are a reporting state, folks, and there are certain things you are mandated to report.
That's right. Yep.
Certain things you are mandated to report. And that's, you know, in Massachusetts you can do it anonymously. I'm not sure about here in the state of Texas. Massachusetts, a denominational preacher was murdered because he turned in a man for abusing his child, and of course that got in the police report, and you know the dad came after him, and not only was it a child abuse problem, it was a murder issue. But we are mandated reporters. There are certain things you cannot keep your keep confidence on. Thanks for bringing that up.
So besides child abuse, what's another one?
Yes, child abuse is one. Spousal abuse, you know, there's most of the abuses, sexual harassment, you know, that sort of thing. We're mandated reporters.
I think he was saying each state varies.
I know, each state varies. That's why I said Massachusetts and Texas. So
research where you live.
Yeah, you need to.
You tell them that up front when they come and they say, I want to give you something in confidence. Do you say, how do you?
When I say, if it is something that I am mandated to report, or if it's an illegal thing that is still, you know, that there's no statute of limitations on,
right,
you know, and I have to report it, I'm legally, ethically, morally, I cannot keep that confidence.
Yeah.
Now you tell them up front.
We'll develop a little more, Brooke Martin, the information is going to be the total concept. What are you looking for? Specifically, you mentioned three items in the course of the study. What kind of person are you looking for? You know, character, things of that nature.
Well, qualifications, I need somebody that I'd. This may sound really, really strange, but I have to be comfortable with that person. And if I am comfortable with that person at the interview, then I don't have a problem in referring them. And number one for me is, are they going to teach biblical principles and concepts? Are they going to keep that? And I've got a couple of people in town here that I won't refer to. And if somebody says, well, I'm going to see so-and-so, what do you think? I'll go, Let me see if I can say that in a nice way that person's a jerk. But anyway, and one of them is. So I need to be comfortable with them, and I don't know how do you quantify that. Okay, preacher, tell me I got to quit. So thank you very much.
Yeah.